Welcome to the AKC Podcast, an audio resource for the King's community following the Associateship of King's College programme. The AKC is an inclusive, research-led programme of lectures which explore diverse religious and cultural perspectives. For more information, visit kcl.ac.uk/AKC. Lecture resources and further reading links for this lecture are available on the AKC Keats area.
Hello everyone. Today I'm going to talk to you about how the Bengali poet thinker Rabindranath Tagore creatively works with and recalibrates some pre-modern Hindu worldviews to craft his vision of the relation between self and other. And by self and other, I mean both human self and human other, and human self and divine other. And as we will see in Tagore's religious writings, these two types of relationality are very densely intertwined. Now let me begin by telling you how I became interested in Tagore's writings on themes such as the structure of the spiritual cosmos, the meaning of art, the purpose of education, the significance of cosmopolitanism, and so on. Roughly 10 years ago, I was exploring how some Sanskrit texts written between the 8th and the 15th centuries present the relation between two spiritual pathways. One is knowledge or gnosis, jnana, and the other is devotional love, prema bhakti. And let me pose the question somewhat bluntly. If God says to you one morning, my dear human being, would you rather know me more deeply or would you rather love me more deeply? What would be your reply? Different styles of Hindu philosophy or theology engage with this question in their distinctive ways. Now, one of Rabindranath Tagore's many claims to fame is that he composed around 2,200 songs in Bengali. As a child, I received a quite rigorous training in singing some of these songs, and especially those songs that are placed in the genre of devotional worship, puja. So my thoughts turned to Tagore, and I asked myself, well, how does Tagore answer this famous Vedantic question about the relation between knowing God and loving God? I found my way to a series of sermons in Bengali that Tagore gave between 1909 and 1916 in a place called Shantiniketan in the state of West Bengal in India. As I systematically read through these sermons, I realized that Tagore was developing his creative exegesis or interpretations of some key ideas from Hindu scriptural texts such as the Upanishads. These are dated at about 600 BCE, and the Bhagavad Gita dated at about 200 CE. Now, in the course of this reading exercise, some of the songs that I had learned to sing when I was around 6 years old suddenly began to shine forth in a new light. I understood that these songs are not simply a collection of words, melodies, and beats. Through these sonic explorations, Tagore was reaching back to what we may call the deep history of Hindu cosmology, encompassing at least two millennia, and rearticulating his central language vocabularies through his poetic styles. So for Tagore, the category called Hindu tradition is a toolbox of vital resources that can be brought to new life in the here and now in order to engage with present-day concerns. Here is one concrete example. One of Tagore's most well-known songs in Bengali starts in that way, and here is the English translation, and here is the song. Koto jana re janaile tumi, koto ghore dile thai, dur ke korile nikoto bondhu, por ke korile bhai. Tagore addresses God as friend, bondhu, a common description of the divine reality in a lot of Vaishnava Hindu devotional poetry. So a vertical friendship with God is the pivot, is the foundation of a horizontal friendship with the rest of humanity. Today when I sing this song, I hear in it Tagore's interpretation of a famous verse from the Isha Upanishad. This is roughly from 600 BCE. And in Tagore's own translation, this verse from the Isha Upanishad states that those who see all things in the spiritual self, Atman, and the spiritual self, Atman, in all things, to such people, nothing is hidden. In short, if we read the song composed in 1907 through what I call a temporal telescope, we would see in it Tagore's reworking of a theme from an ancient scriptural text. Namely, the spiritual relation between humanity and divinity is the foundation of the social relation between ourselves and those who are strangers to us. If we can dig into our egocentric insularity in the direction of the universal foundation of all reality, we will be able to reach out laterally to a world populated by those whom we may regard as aliens or foreigners. And that is the leitmotif that I will now address in the next 30 minutes or so. Before I proceed, here are some biographical pointers to the many Tagores who are encompassed by that one name, Rabindranath Tagore. Tagore was a complex personality with multiple interests and passions. To begin with, Tagore was a poet who received the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1913. He was a vocal critique of various dimensions of the British Empire, but he also cultivated close friendships with a few Englishmen. He was a deep thinker who incorporated images of rural Bengal into his short stories. He loved his homeland of Bengal, and he was also an internationalist who set up a university for universal humanity. His novels contained various styles of social critique, and on some occasions he questioned Mahatma Gandhi's socio-political activism. He was also an educationist who tried to free children from the rigid constraints of the classroom. Tagore's life and literary works have been extensively discussed in various publications, including books, articles, and edited volumes. In recent years, his rejection of aggressive forms of nationalistic chauvinism has been incorporated into some postcolonial perspectives. His belief that schools should provide a natural environment that vitally fosters children's curiosity has been developed by some pedagogical thinkers. His famous discussion with Albert Einstein regarding the nature of reality has been revisited from the perspectives of quantum physics. Tagore's views on all these topics are closely related to his understanding of some core concepts from the Upanishads, such as the spiritual self or Atman, the significance of self-knowledge or self-inquiry, and the relation between the individual self and the divine reality or Brahman. A recurring theme in his views is the concept of harmony or samanjasya, which shapes the symbiotic relationship between polarities, such as the human and the divine, the householder and the hermit, the finite and the infinite, individual and society, and home and the world, to go back to the title of the topic of my talk. And all these polarities can be seen as Tagore's reformulations of the Vedantic motif of the relation between the one and the many. Now, to say that the heart of reality is constituted by a deep harmony or samanjasya is not to suggest that we already embody it in our everyday lives. According to Tagore's theological anthropology, the human being who carries out this task of harmonization or fine-tuning this cosmological harmony is, quote-unquote, a creature of conflict. We dwell in an existential space between egoism and the supreme goal of ego effacement, between bondage and liberation, and between the finite and the infinite. And from within this fraught space, we would begin to realize ever more deeply these fibers of cosmological harmony or samanjasya. So while Tagore rejected standpoints where concrete particulars are dissolved in an undifferentiated unity, he also rejected standpoints where these particulars are set forward as insular holes across which no communication is possible. And to make sense of this twofold rejection, consider your friend Sophie Juliet Andrews, who is English, who loves apple pie, and who is studying French literature at Dublin. On the one hand, Sophie is not simply a collection of the species Homo sapiens. Her concrete reality or her sociological identity is composed of the three fine-grained features that I highlighted just now and many more. On the other hand, Sophie's distinctive identity does not quarantine her in some kind of existential space where no dialogical conversation can unfold between her and her interlocutors. So Tagore was opposed to styles of monastic renunciation in a world-dissolving quest, and he was also opposed to styles of ecstatic devotion in which certain individuals may become so absorbed in self-forgetful subjectivities. In his exploration of the relation between the quote-unquote limited and the quote-unquote limitless, Tagore suggests that our true spiritual discipline, or sadhana, involves the manifestation of the limitless within our own human limits. So while he rejected social formations that would remove or erase distinctive cultural identities, he also opposed social formations that would valorize indigenous modes of living as perfect and unalterable. In other words, Tagore opposed both blind emulations of European styles that would diminish Bengali identity and also critical insularities that would prevent free exchange of ideas across sociocultural boundaries. The self-other dialectic that is included in the affirmations and negations I have highlighted just now can be spelled out concretely in that way. The particular must be affirmed in its limited particularity, even as the particular gains its significance through its unfoldment in the limitless universal. So according to Tagore, neither the unreflective imitation of English rulers nor the indiscriminate acceptance of Hindu orthodoxies was the pathway towards constructing human relationality. So he criticized the Anglicized sections of Bengal for viewing the history of their land solely through Europeanized perspectives, and he also berated some other groups of Bengali society for claiming that European civilization lacked any historical significance. In 1908, Tagore became the first president to deliver an address in Bengali at the Bengal Provincial Congress, and a few decades later, in February 1937, he delivered the convocation address at Calcutta University in Bengali for the first time in his history. At the same time, Tagore criticized the pundits of the country for advocating that preserving their national purity required avoiding contact with foreigners in every way. In short, Tagore pointed to a unity that is not a blank homogeneity in which all multiplicities are removed or extinguished, while he also emphasized that unless these multiplicities are rooted in a center of coherence, they would descend into insularity or disorder. In Tagore's quest for what we may call a complexly differentiated unity, the universe is shaped by rhythms of light and darkness, motion and rest, individuality and sociality, and so on. And the harmonization of one pole with the other takes place within an integral reality, and that pathway is the pathway towards human relationality and human fulfillment. Tagore's writings on religious themes often express the creative tension between highlighting the distinctiveness of something while also situating it within the spaces of an interconnected universe. In an essay on the topic of the Hindu University, writing in 1911, Tagore emphasizes the importance of respecting the differences of what is truly different, prithak, in order to bring about true union, milan. And he argues that such unity cannot be achieved by removing or erasing differences, bhed. Rather, such unity can be achieved by preserving or maintaining such difference. And according to Tagore, writing in 1911, this is the really significant question facing the whole world. And if particular and universal are so deeply interconnected and interrelated, it follows that by becoming decentered from the universal, the particular undergoes a diminishment of its being. Conversely, by regaining or discovering its root in the universal, the particular realizes its true significance. So Tagore writes that we truly gain our own selves in the midst of others, which is why we should reach out to people from different lands. Indeed, the more extensively each particular becomes interrelated with the whole, the greater is its development or expansion. Tagore often articulates the paradox that by separating ourselves egoistically from the networks of relationality that connect us to the world, we do not make ourselves big. Rather, we undergo a contraction. When we are concerned entirely with our little self, we turn away from the higher self, and thus we become deformed. According to Tagore, the decline undergone by individuals in this manner is reflected in society as a whole. He writes that civilizations crumble due to a distorted form of human relationship in which a divide is created between the powerful and the weak, resulting in the collapse of social harmony. And in this way, social fabrics begin to unravel with one group as the masters and the other as the servants, and there is no exchange of ideas and values between them. The human self can recognize its true inner greatness only when it properly becomes recentered in the divine reality, Brahman, infusing all humanity, according to Tagore, and the Vedantic Hindu notion that one's friend or one's neighbor, in principle the whole world, is one's another self, is reflected in a poem that Tagore dictated on his 88th birthday. Once I went to the land of China, those whom I had not met put the mark of friendship on my forehead, calling me their own. A Chinese name I took, dressed in Chinese clothes. This I know in my mind, wherever I find my friend, there I am born anew. Thus, in an address in 1908, we find Tagore saying that whatever prevents our perfect or complete concordance with even one human being also restricts our union or friendship with Brahman. If we regard our neighbors as radically alien to us, we mistakenly treat Brahman too as categorically separate from us. Reflecting this deep interrelationality between self and other, Tagore writes that the nature of the human heart is such that it is satisfied only when it is able to reproduce its own emotions in the emotions of others. Tagore's interpretive writings on the Upanishads include criticisms of the insular styles of some traditional Hindu sociocultural standpoints. He also criticizes the isolationist lifestyles of English civil servants in India, the emphasis on modes of either world renunciation or devotional ecstasy, and the aggressive pace of Western industrialism or nationalism. Tagore tells us that the infinite is not an empty substance beyond all worldly affairs or just a philosophical doctrine, tattva kotha. It is a manifest reality that people in ancient India, according to him, sought to express in all aspects of their everyday life. Weaving together the motives of the finite and the infinite, that is, the political and the theological, Tagore urges the people of Bengal to make the distant their proximate and to make what is other to them their very own, rather than simply harboring animosity towards Europeans or British as foreigners. He laments that people have not been able to cultivate the natural sociality which leads to spontaneous love or sahaj priti and draws other people closer to us. Without being able to actively develop such bonds of human familiarity, we cannot achieve a genuine union of hearts. Even when we are compelled by political exigencies to appeal to other people to join us. Thus, Tagore tells us that during the Swadeshi movement after the first partition of Bengal in 1905, Bengali Muslims did not join in large numbers because they were kept at a social distance through the divisive barriers of Hindu sociocultural customs. On this trajectory of harmonization, Tagore criticizes certain forms of Hindu devotional ecstasy where individuals may become unable to effectively carry out their worldly responsibilities amidst the struggles and afflictions of everyday life. Tagore is sometimes regarded as a dreamy-eyed romantic or mystical poet who was completely submerged in visions of sweetness and light. Such criticism, in Tagore's own assessment, should be directed towards the followers of these religious movements. In 1909, Tagore emphasizes that union with God can be achieved only through devotional sentiment or rasa in the heart, but he also cautions us that devotion can generate certain styles of self-absorbed enjoyment. Instead, individuals should be able to joyfully accept suffering in the pursuit of complete fulfillment, and the pathway to the perfection of love leads not through a self-directed ecstasy, but through world-directed service, or seva. A few years later, Tagore writes that the people of India have occasionally lost sight of the spiritual quest because they have not been able to harmonize their inner selves with the outer world. Sometimes they have directed their attention solely to the path of knowledge, while at other times they have followed only the path of devotion and failed to engage concretely with the world. If such devotees overemphasize the love of God without actively pursuing pathways through the world, Tagore perceives an opposite imbalance in the West's materialistic enterprises. Western nations have become disconnected from the spiritual center of gravity that underlies all worldly contradictions and are thus trapped in a never-ending cycle of accumulation. Against such one-sided enterprises, an Upanishad-motivated quest for the eternal in and through the temporal would shape both the religious and the sociocultural dimensions of human existence. In the introduction to his book, Creative Unity, Tagore writes, "To give perfect expression to the one, the infinite, through the harmony of the many, to the one, the love, through the sacrifice of self, is the object alike of our individual life and our society." From Tagore's perspective, the derivation of the Bengali word for relationship, namely atmiyota, from the Sanskrit word atman, is not a semantic accident, for he often quotes the Isha Upanishad as the scriptural basis of his view that those who see all beings in the atman and the atman in all beings will not feel hatred towards anyone. As we become able to see our own selves as residing within the Supreme Self, and the Supreme Self as residing within our own selves, we will see that they, that is, people who are our aliens or foreigners, too reside within the Supreme Self, and the Supreme Self resides within them too. And in this way, our forgiveness, love, and tolerance towards others will become natural or shahaj. This type of interrelationality animates several key themes in Tagore's writings, such as internationalism, religion of humanity, and humanism. He developed these themes by creatively adopting and adapting the Vedantic motive that the self-atman in the human individual is spiritually continuous with the divine reality Brahman, and perfected individuals are they who are able to spontaneously discern the self in the world and the world in the self. And this Upanishadic vision of the inner self underlying all reality would shape and energize the articulation, this was Tagore's hope, of dialogical modes of human understanding, sensibility, and affectivity across East-West dividing binary lines. For Tagore, while socio-historical pressures such as the arrival of the British in South Asia and the relentless mechanization of a new era have opened up the land to vast seas of humanity, these developments have not introduced a completely new message called quote-unquote internationalism. This is because, according to Tagore, the composers of the ancient Upanishads urge us to look into the inner self and envision the spiritual basis of a universal humanity. For instance, the ancient Rig Vedic Gayatri Mantra too urges us, according to Tagore, to break through our egoistic attachments, petty thoughts, and narrow customs. This mantra indicates, Tagore tells us, that our great shelter is the whole world. Writing on the 13th of March, 1921, to his friend and confidant, C.F. Andrews, who was an Anglican Englishman from Cambridge, to whom he dedicated his two books, Personality and Nationalism, Tagore says that, quote-unquote, the true India is an idea and not a mere geographical fact. This idea is expressed through the text in the Upanishads. The infinite personality whose light reveals itself through the obscuration of darkness. We must struggle against the darkness of nationalistic egoism so that the light of the infinite personality is revealed to us in a quote-unquote grand harmony of all humanity. A few months later, Tagore writes to Andrews that the Upanishadic message of quote-unquote one in the all, which was proclaimed by sages in the ancient forests of India, can bring together people who have forgotten their common humanity. From this Upanishadic perspective, Tagore writes that we experience within ourselves a unity. And this is why we also seek a unity in the world around us. We are satisfied when we perceive unity, and we seek interpersonal unity and unity across humanity. He envisioned the school that he established at Shantiniketan as a place where children would perceive the entire history of humanity in an indivisible manner through a spiritual lens. In short, what we may call quote-unquote Tagore's Vedantic cosmopolitanism does not efface, but indeed preserves the particular. Tagore argues that just as by stringing together roses, jasmines, and lotuses, we do not achieve a higher beauty called interfloral, likewise, quote-unquote, true universalism is not the breaking down of the walls of one's own house, but the offering of hospitality to one's guests and neighbors. In words which are often quoted in the contemporary literature on South Asia, Tagore writes that modernism does not lie in European dress styles or educational institutions where children are interned during lessons, or square houses where people are caged. Instead, true modernism is, quote-unquote, freedom of mind, not slavery of taste. It is independence of thought and action, not tutelage under European schoolmasters. So a, quote-unquote, cosmopolitan individual would develop their sense of self by harmonizing this distinctive sense with the existential realities of guests and neighbors across the world. Thus, Tagore was opposed to monolithic binaries such as quote-unquote Daoist versus quote-unquote Daoist. While he criticized Western nationalisms for producing militarized cultures based on an instrumental rationality, he also castigated certain groups of Bengali and Hindu society for developing an inward-looking attitude that was not responsive to creative impulses from the West. For Tagore, human freedom is to be attained not through tools drawn from Western nationalism or from chauvinistic forms of Indian self-assertion, but through the difficult and the arduous cultivation of an Atman-animated unity of humankind through love, harmony, and interdependence. A form of harmonizing is crucial also to creativity, exemplified richly in Tagore's own poetry, music, and novels. According to Tagore, creativity is not simply a human exercise. It is a dynamic side where human beings would cultivate the self-donating nature of divine reality, Brahman. Tagore uses the metaphor of the divine reality as a cosmic musician who is playing on and playing with the finite instruments who are human beings. The supreme joy of the divine reality lies in inspiring human beings to creatively respond to this musical outreach by contributing to the unfolding harmony that is the universal symphony. In other words, creativity is a process of harmonization through which individuals would overcome their insularity and joyfully express the inner self or Atman to the whole world. Tagore tells us that there is even a similarity of nature between the individual self, Atma, and the supreme self, Paramatma, in terms of creativity, that is the process of giving oneself to others. The nature of the human self is joyful, and such a joyful self is a giver, a data. Therefore, we should aspire to a creativity that is similar to that of God. God eternally creates through self-sacrifice, and to the extent that we too can joyfully emulate God by negating our egoism, we too are creative. And such creativity is possible because each human being is inherently distinctive. Crucially, this distinctiveness itself is a gift from the divine reality, so that a cosmic spore, kela or lila, can unfold between us and the divine reality. Each individual is a special I, Bishesh Ami. Throughout infinite time, there is no one else who is exactly like me, and my I-ness makes me distinct from everyone and everything else, according to Tagore. At the same time, developing the dialectic that I have highlighted, Tagore writes that our irreducible singularity can be fulfilled only because there are some universal rules that are not dependent on our subjectivist fancies. For instance, poets who wish to extend their creative joy to the world have to speak in a language that is intelligible to others. Thus, the journey towards perfecting human existence moves forward not in spite of, but precisely because of our distinctive qualities, which should be protected against attempts to impose all-encompassing structures on them, whether these are cultural norms, imperialist hierarchies, or nationalistic presuppositions. The spiritual journey of harmonizing the inner and the outer, or to reflect the title of this talk, of remaking a home in the world involves the surgical removal of the egocentric I. Tagore indicates that we are all inwardly conflicted beings because we live in two places. We live in the divine reality and we also live in the everyday world. And until we are capable of the supreme love, prema, through which our true relationship with the rest of humanity would be perfected, we have to endure numerous blows. So the harmonization or the alignment of the human self presently mired in egoism with the boundlessly creative divine self involves a painful operation. Tagore himself was painfully aware that his cosmological vision of harmony remained fragmented by different types of socio-political boundaries. For instance, between the English and Indians, between Hindus and Muslims, and between Hindus from different caste-shaped locations. Therefore, the Upanishadic wholeness that Tagore points to does not exclude the negativities of human existence, but seeks to encompass them in a perfection that is deeper than what we experience within our worldly limitations. These idioms, cosmological as well as anthropological, were informed by the religious sensibilities of rural Bengali folk. Tagore reports that he once witnessed a musical performance in a small village of mostly poor Muslim peasants, where a watchman accused an individual who was trying to enter the Garden of Bliss, Vrindavan, of being a thief. The theft, it turns out, was that of trying to smuggle into the garden the human egoistic self without surrendering it to God. Tagore's sketch highlights his conviction that the rustic earthiness of the Bengali countryside is a natural habitation of the spiritual life. Under a tattered canopy held on bamboo poles and lighted by a few smoking kerosene lamps, the village crowd, occasionally interrupted by howls of jackals in the neighboring paddy fields, attended with untired interest till the small hours of the morning. The performance of a drama that discussed the ultimate meaning of all things in a seemingly incongruous setting of dance, music, and humorous dialogue. Tagore's numerous reflections on religious themes coexist in a complex tapestry which is structured by the golden thread of harmony, or Shaman Joshua, between the human self and the human other, and the human self and the divine other. And these polarities complement each other in the Upanishadic visions of Tagore's religious thought, which is often articulated through the sensuous imageries of love, prem. Tagore urges his readers to break through parochial affiliations and recover the deep unity of the individual self that underlies everything, while emphasizing that this spiritual reality is to be discerned in forms of joyful creativity. In becoming progressively infused with the spirit, we would become empowered to remain engaged in the world through all its divisions, dissonances, and disjunctions, and joyfully work towards the construction or reconstruction of a universal humanity. Thus, to return to the song with which I began these reflections, Tagore says, Burano abasho chere jai jobe mone bebe mori ki jani ki hobe purano abash chere jai jobe mone bebe mori ki jani ki hobe notonero maje tumi puratono shikota je bhule jai jibone morone nikhilo bhubone jokhoni je khane lobe chiro jono mero porichito he tumi chinabe shobe. Tomare janile nahi keho por nahi kono mana nahi kono dor shobare milaye tumi jagitecho dekha jeno shoda pai.
Thank you for listening to the AKC podcast. If you have enjoyed this lecture, please click subscribe in your podcast app to receive future episodes. AKC, at the heart of King's thinking.